update, review some of those transactions, look ahead to the start of free agency, as well as your thoughts on the upcoming draft. So a lot to tackle. Let's start with some news and notes around the NFL, Paul. And the Denver Broncos, according to multiple reports, are going to ship Aqib Talib, the five-time Pro Bowl corner, to the L.A. Rams, as the Rams are rebuilding their secondary. This also is going to reunite Aqib Talib with Wade Phillips, who was his defensive coordinator in Denver for 15 and 16, and now is the D.C. with the L.A. Rams.
You know, Talib, for being as good as he is, and let's not kid ourselves, he is a top-flight corner. You know, he's bounced around a bit. I mean, there have been... I don't know him well enough to say that there are attitude issues, but we certainly have heard about how he does not fit in with the chemistry of places he's been to. And therefore, after a given amount of time, they decide that he's got to go. It's unfortunate because when you get a player of that capability, you know, you'd like to believe you're going to hold on to him for a real long period of time. But this is a guy who, you know, he can play anything you want. He can play zone. He can play press man.
Inside, outside.
Yeah. And he's physical. He's a good player. So, good move for the Rams.
I agree.
If it's true.
Yes. I mean, once again, it's all based on reports that were circulating last night. But clearly the Rams are tweaking their defense, and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the financials and trying to work the cap around with the flexibility to maybe re-sign Aaron Donald to a long-term extension. The other thing that was notable was DeMarco Murray was let go by the Tennessee Titans, so an additional running back is going to be on the free agent market. And he's a power back who is just below the age of 30, somebody that's been productive, some durability questions over the course of his career. But I think it's going to be somebody that's going to receive some interest given the fact that you could bring him in and still give him about 15 carries a game.
Yeah, that's true. You know, he's 2 years removed now from a 1,000-yard Pro Bowl season with the Tennessee Titans last year. You know, he and Henry obviously wound up sharing a whole bunch of the carries, and they've decided to go with the younger guy now. As you know, running backs, when they get near that 30 mark, a lot of teams, they get real, real edgy about that. And so they've shipped him off maybe a year too soon as opposed to a year too late. You know, Bill Belichick's very well known for that up in New England. Maybe the Titans have followed that course of action, and DeMarco Murray may very well have some years of productivity left. I personally don't think, you know, he is a 20-carry-a-game guy who you can rely on for 16 games and say, okay, you know, you're going to be that kind of guy for us. But I see no reason why he could not give a team 15 carries a game and give them between-the-tackle yardage. And so, yeah, I think he's got some tread left on his tire. Then again, I didn't watch a ton of Tennessee Titans football last year. Maybe, you know, he only averaged 3.6 yards a carry.
They struggled as a team overall.
And, you know, that's about a yard under his average for his career. You know, that's never a good sign for a running back. Having said that, I still think there are a lot of teams in the NFL who would want to take a good look at him before they decide what they're going to do.
Yeah, I still think he has some gas in the tank. To your point, they do want to showcase Derrick Henry, and the two of them really split carries last season. If you look at the numbers, it was really about a 50-50 split. And let's face it, Paul, if you look across the National Football League, you know, everybody throws out the term workhorse. How many true workhorses are there in today's NFL? I mean, let's be serious. Most teams, they have about two or three backs, and they find a way to mix them in. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a running back that averages 25 carries a game in today's NFL.
Very difficult to do. And, you know, I think in addition to the 1-on-1A thing, which we're all talking about nowadays in the modern-day game, you also have to worry about salary issues because it's like, well, if you're really going to split your running back core into certain pieces, how much money can you give to that room? And certainly to one or just two of those guys, because after all, it is a divvying up situation. Think about this. You know, your defensive end, in the case of the Giants, their guys are playing 95% of the snaps.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to a running back, in today's game, that guy is playing so few snaps compared to some of the other positions on the field. It's hard to start justifying the kind of payout that those guys want, even though they may be a 1,000-yard back.
Well, and that's what the Steelers are facing, because I think
with
this one hits home with Le'Veon Bell.
It really does.
Giving him the franchise tag and not knowing, you know, if they do work out a long-term deal, what his true value is. Now, Le'Veon Bell is a huge X factor, huge game changer. I think that's been well documented, but it goes back to what you were just talking about. Does it warrant locking up X amount of dollars with that player if you're not necessarily going to give them X amount of carries? The old phrase is you want as much bang for your buck as humanly possible.
Great phrase.
Now, Bell is the exception because Bell is the guy that you give about 20 carries a game, or forget 20 carries.
Standing player.
You give him about 25 touches a game because, remember, he could catch 7 to 8 balls. So that's the one running back that I would say, you know what, I'd be willing to give him the money because you utilize him in so many different
ways.
People
think David Johnson's in that category,
David Johnson's a good one, too, with Arizona, but you can name five. That's about it.
Yeah.
I mean, LeSean McCoy I would throw into that mix, too, in terms of Buffalo. But Buffalo now just signed Chris Ivory, so maybe they're trying to limit the amount of opportunities
Elliott's
that a player
in that category.
Like LeSean McCoy, Ezekiel Elliott. But once again,
Gurley.
Okay.
We're getting kind of thin after that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the ballpark of five. Everybody else really is a two-headed monster. I mean, you could throw out maybe Dalvin Cook if Minnesota gets to the point where they want to establish him. Right. But, you know, you figure if they bring back Latavius Murray, they could have a 1-2 punch with respect to that.
That is true.
And if you look within the division, within the NFC East, I mean, the Cowboys were the only team to really have one guy that they were banking on. Detroit did not have much of a running game. Chicago, Jordan Howard, would you put him in that category? The Bears, I mean, he's borderline there. I mean, he's in the conversation.
Put it this way, the Emmitt Smiths, the John Riggins, the Joe Morrises
of the
world. Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah. So that's why I think teams, executives are all trying to juggle the finances when it comes to a running back. But Bell is in that conversation. And, you know, DeMarco Murray is going to learn that when you're a guy at this point in your career who doesn't get 20 carries, all of a sudden the amount of money that teams are willing to throw your way changes dramatically as well.
Here's an interesting question. If you're a team that needs a running back and you look at DeMarco Murray and say, well, he's proven, he's still on the right side of 30, even though it's not by a lot, do you think about filling your running back hole with him now as opposed to waiting till after the draft when there are a plethora of running backs supposedly available? There are three and third and fourth round running backs in this draft that people believe
a lot of depth
are going to be able to give you those 10, 12, 15 carries immediately, plug-and-play guys. So if you're a GM, what do you do? Do you try to fill that hole and say, well, we got our guy already, we don't have to worry about it in the draft? Or do you say, well, if we wait till the draft, we'll probably get one of those young guys who's going to come in at a dirt cheap price because he'll be on his rookie contract. And then, you know, if we don't get one, we can always put in a call to DeMarco Murray later on. The timing is going to be very interesting in terms of where he decides to go and when he decides to go.
Well, I agree with you that if I'm an executive and I have an opportunity to draft a running back in the fourth or the fifth round, that's appealing. So I don't know how aggressive I would be in terms of signing a running back on the free agent market. But I think it goes back to what's the makeup of your team, Paul. If you're a running back room that's extremely young, you may say we're going to add a young kid in the backfield through the draft, but there may be value in adding somebody like DeMarco Murray who brings a little bit more experience and seasoning to that room, who you don't have to necessarily give 25 carries to, but you could say, hey, DeMarco, we envision giving you 12 carries a game. We also want you to help groom some of the young guys in our backfield. If he's willing to take on that role, I think there is value in bringing somebody like that.
The style of your backfield is
that's
also
another big
factor as well.
You may not have a downhill runner like DeMarco Murray.
He's going between the tackles.
So I would bring him in then, especially if you don't think that style you can address in the draft. You know, maybe you feel a lot of the running backs, there's quality, but most of them are outside runners or receiving third down backs. So Murray then can create a market for himself if he's unique compared to what this draft class presents.
Well, for example, if you're going to go after Chubb, who I think most people think is a third-round running back, at least that's the vibe I got from the combine, do you gamble on the fact you'll get somebody like him, you know, on third, maybe, who knows, maybe even drops to the fourth round because maybe
concerned
people
about the injury history
are more concerned about that leg than others. So it's that one's going to be a really interesting one to watch of some of the guys who've been released over the course of the next couple of weeks. I think he's a very intriguing name right now.
Well, and we've seen this. There's been a number of veteran free agents that have been let go from their respective teams, but a number of them, Paul, have also since signed with new teams.
Yes.
For example, Chris Baker. I know I'm going to the opposite side of the field. Chris Baker, mm-hmm. the defensive lineman for the Bucs, who spent a lot of time with the Redskins, he was let go last month and then just signed with the Bengals. So a lot of these players, they seem to find suitors even before the free agent market gets going.
It goes back to that theory of we don't want to go into the draft needing X position. And if you really feel much more comfortable at plugging a hole in the dam before you get to the draft and you say, that's it, done, not worried about it, put that thing on the shelf, let's move on to the next hole. If you really feel that strongly about it, you're going to go after a guy like DeMarco Murray because he does have a proven track record, a one-time All-Pro, a three-time Pro Bowler who has, you know, put together a pretty darn good resume over the course of his career.
Well, and I think what you're connecting to is a larger theme that I'm seeing this offseason, Paul. There's reportedly been a lot of trades that are happening that won't become official until the new league year starts on March 14th. But are teams saying to themselves, which is the philosophy that you just hit on, would I rather invest my resources in a proven commodity versus rolling the dice with a late draft pick?
Well,
we're seeing a lot of sacrificing of perhaps mid to late round picks, according to reports, for established veterans.
Well, I think part of that equation has got to be your salary cap, too.
Because can you absorb the contract?
You have to be able to work those numbers in properly and still give yourself enough room to have some flexibility in the draft. If you're strapped up against the cap, then you're really not dealing with any of these guys.
No, that's fair. Yeah.
So that's probably the first consideration, and then the second consideration is, okay, can we fill that hole and not worry about it? But the money deal, and we know from just looking at the estimates from a site like Over the Cap that half the teams in this league have a tremendous amount of money to spend right now, and then the other half kind of don't. It's
which is really what it's like every single year. I don't think this offseason is any different than the market presented in previous years.
I haven't done a statistical analysis on it, but it does seem as though the two groups are split a little bit more widely than they have been in the past.
Where there's been more middle,
yeah,
you're talking about
in
terms of teams bunched together?
I think
it's possible. I always feel like you got the group of teams.
I haven't analyzed it, so don't hold me to that, folks. But, you know, you do hear a lot about how there's like this top 10 teams that have a ridiculous amount of money to spend, and when you get a guy like Kirk Cousins on the market, you know, those are some of the teams that you're listening to and hearing like, oh, wow, you know, they could throw the entire Fort Knox to them and, you know, Brink's truck, back it up because they could just throw ridiculous amounts of money at him. That's what you get.
Well, and that presents why this market is unique this year, because I don't remember having this many established quarterbacks that are due to hit free agency.
And so much available money under the cap.
Correct.
For so many teams.
When you combine that, and that really gets back to what we've been talking about for the last few weeks, you know, how much will the free agent quarterback market impact the mindset of teams as they get to the draft? And I think it's going to have a really big impact, because while Kirk Cousins is the prize possession, mm-hmm. there's going to be somebody, Paul, that is going to say, you know what, I'd feel better with maybe taking a chance on Sam Bradford than perhaps a young kid. There's going to be a team that's going to say, you know what, we'll give Case Keenum a look. Even though it's a small sample size and he had one solid season with Minnesota, maybe we'd rather see if he could duplicate that than roll the dice with a young quarterback. There's going to be a team that I'm sure is going to pursue Teddy Bridgewater. And they're going to say, you know what, we liked what happened before the knee injury. Let's bring him in and see what he can bring to the table as well.
Well, think about this when you're approaching all the numbers and the salary cap issues that a lot of these teams are going to be dealing with. There weren't very many tags. Tagging period's closed. You know, Jarvis Landry was the big name.
And Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell.
I don't think anybody anticipated he was going to move to begin with.
No. I mean, he wasn't signing anywhere else anyway.
And DeMarcus Lawrence of the Cowboys was probably the other big name.
Lawrence. And he signed it already, his tender. Graham Gano was threatened with a tag, supposedly, according to the reports out of Charlotte, and then decided to agree to a deal that would avoid the tag. And that's it. I mean, I don't recall hearing any transitions getting slapped on anybody.
I've not heard that, based on reports.
You know? So, well, it's not even reports now. It's over. Tag
Correct.
Period
yes,
is over.
It's over.
So
yeah.
we know.
No,
who
but
was
I'm
said.
Saying about even teams considering giving
no,
a player
I didn't
the
even hear about considerations.
Sometimes you hear some yeah. chatter. I didn't even hear that.
Didn't happen.
So that's
didn't happen.
Something to
you know, Vikings
at least look
didn't,
at.
Yeah. didn't do anything.
Yeah, but I mean, do you really think the Vikings were even considering giving any
Probably
of the tags
not.
To their quarterbacks?
Probably not. But they could have.
Certainly,
they certainly
have
had it in their pocket if they wanted to.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Twitter as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. Ben is in Dallas. Ben, what's happening?
Hello.
How we doing, Ben? All right, Ben is a man of very few words, apparently, on today's program. Let's see if Oren in Richmond is a bit more talkative than Ben. Oren, the floor is yours. What's happening?
How
Hello.
You guys doing today?
Doing right, Oren.
I'm good. You know, it's a lot of good free agent quarterbacks in the draft and the free agency this year. Then I think they're a solid that I feel like that Cleveland Browns is going to take because John Dorsey, Steven said that he doesn't believe in starting a rookie. And also, I don't think it's fair to Sean Kizer. He didn't really have that much help last year. So, but he was only his rookie year and stuff. And I'm kind of hoping they take Saquon Barkley where it has to force the Giants to either get Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or just trade out the pick because I don't like Josh Allen or any of the other quarterbacks. And I'd be very upset if they got Baker Mayfield. I just don't think he would fit with our system. And this is his cockiness. I just think it would divide the locker room and stuff. And I also love that linebacker pick and stuff. And I'm hoping that they get Darius Geis probably in the second. Hopefully they can get him in the second round, and hopefully get some tackles around the third and the fourth. Get the rest of the picks with tackles and stuff like that.
Well, Geis is the running back from LSU, who
yes.
he's referring to, who is one of the players that I think did well for himself at the combine
Strong
in terms
second
of the 40
round
yard
value.
Dash. Yeah, and he's going to be a guy, you know, right behind Barkley that teams are going to look at in probably the second, third round area, I think.
You know, I think it's interesting, though, that we've talked for so many months about upgrading the offensive line, and here we have the caller saying maybe wait to the third or even fourth round to get a lineman. I can't do that. I'm sorry, I just can't. I mean, the Giants, in my mind, they got to take a lineman, if not in round one, and they certainly, you know, could move out of the number two spot to do that if they wanted to, you got to take a lineman in round two. I don't think you can wait till rounds three or four. Again, pending
what happens
in free agency,
yeah.
Okay? If they go and sign two free agent offensive linemen, maybe they can wait till round
it
three of the
change
draft.
The urgency.
Hey,
yes.
Paul. Hey, Paul.
Yeah.
What's your name? I feel like if we get the Andrew Norway pick and we get a tackle in free agency and stuff, I think we could be really solid. Have Eric Flowers compete for the left job. He doesn't get it. Just put him on the right side because he is a first round pick and we can't just give up on him like that. And
right.
maybe try to get John Jerry or get another guard and stuff like that. I feel like that could be straight.
Well, you know, I'd like to see them re-sign DJ Fluker. And again, right now he's not a high priority name compared to all of the other headliners that will be available in free agency. But I think he certainly warrants, a return. And as far as Flowers goes, Flowers is going to be one of the Giants' starting five linemen in September. Now, where he lines up, I'm perfectly willing to tell you he could be a right tackle, he could be a left tackle, he could be a guard. I'm not going to stay married to the left tackle thing. I feel like he almost becomes the plug-in guy. You know, where you need him the most, that's where he's going to go. And if you have to teach him to play guard because you're able to get yourself a couple of tackles, fine, then do it. But he's going to be one of their starting five.
Oh, his value, he's still on a rookie contract, and you need depth because it's very rare
yeah.
that guys stay fully healthy on the offensive line for all 16 games.
And if he's starting at left tackle in September, don't be shocked. It could
no,
certainly happen.
Yeah.
And I would not be crying about that because if they can upgrade the rest of the line and Flowers is still their left tackle, it's going to be good enough.
And Jerry, who you brought up, Oren, he's already under contract, so you don't have to worry about him.
That is true. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. Thank you.
All right,
take care.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Daniel in Colorado. Daniel, what's happening?
Not a whole lot. How are you guys doing today?
Doing all right, Daniel.
Good.
Hey, guys. I want to talk first about the Ogletree deal. I'm kind of curious.
You mean like reported deal?
It seems like
reported
it was a pretty good deal for the Giants. My question on that would be, giving up the two picks, how do you think that would affect our ability to trade back into the first round if we decided to, get alignment or whatever?
Well, first of all, that trade is unofficial. Nothing has been formally announced by the Giants, and nothing can be formally announced until March 14th, once the new league year starts.
Right.
So we got to make that clear. So, I mean, in terms of talking about Ogletree, there's not much to comment other than he's a solid player, and we'll see whether or not anything becomes official in the next few days. In terms of wiggle room when it comes to trading picks from a generic standpoint, I mean, a lot depends on what the Giants want to do at number two. You know, if they are in love with a player, Daniel, and they feel as if the value warrants the number two pick, then I think any executive will tell you, Paul, it's hard for you to hesitate and pass up on that opportunity, regardless of what happens with the rest of your draft picks, because you want to be able to say we're using our resource wisely as opposed to out of hesitation moving down.
Although I am a strong proponent of trading down at number two to acquire more picks, and I've said it 5 billion times on this program, I also admit that you have to defer to your general manager. Dave Gettleman was brought here to do a job. And if he has conviction that he has to have a certain guy at number two, well, you give him the space and the leeway to make that pick and to grab that supposed franchise player. I would say this, though. From a philosophical standpoint, I'm of the belief that Dave Gettleman is probably better off with having as many picks as he can get his hands on in this draft, as he tries to get a lot of quality players to quickly rebuild this Giants team. And to do that, if they are going to deal away any picks in whatever kind of trade may or may not be happening, that kind of says to me he may be a little more itchy to trade the number two to go get some more picks back. I could understand the logic.
I think that's where I was kind of going with that. Yeah, and I know all these trades and free agency and all this is all hypothetical. But in the hypothetical scenario with Ogletree, it appeared to me by giving up a couple of picks that kind of was a telltale sign that he might make him, Gettleman might make a move to acquire some other picks in a different way.
There's certainly logic in that train of thought, and I understand exactly where you're going, because when I heard different things, kind of bandied about, one of the things I said right away is, okay, well, then that kind of triggers the desire to get more picks somewhere else. So I get it. I totally get what you're saying.
Now, I'll make this real quick. Also, on this, hypothetically speaking, how would this affect the Ogletree deal affect the salary cap? Does it really affect it at all, much at all?
Well,
in the big
if
picture,
I may say, regardless of what the Giants do to acquire a veteran, they're going to have to look at their numbers. They're going to have to look at the team's current numbers. And there are always machinations that you can do to finagle numbers around to get yourself under the cap. There are, you may not like some of them, but there are certainly options that you can use that will twist, bend,
make tweaks,
pry,
yeah,
tweak, use whatever verb you want,
restructure contract,
to make sure that you get certain guys to fit if you need to do so. So don't worry about that.
Okay, one last thing that I'll say, and in a previous call, I had mentioned that we don't want to go into the draft appearing desperate at any position. Well, if we do make the Ogletree deal, and rumor has it that we, the Giants somehow are linked to Norwell, if those two deals end up happen, then I think that checks a couple of boxes nicely for us going into the draft. What are you guys' thoughts on that? And I'll take that off the air. Thanks, guys.
All right, appreciate the phone call. But remember, it goes back to the 2018 NFL draft is not just for 2018. The 2018 NFL draft is for the short term and the long term. So to the caller's point, Paul, just because you address certain areas in free agency, so let's say they do address the offensive line, whether they bring in one or two guys and they address maybe a void on defense or whatever it may be, you're still not necessarily going into the draft saying, well, we still have a few more pieces that we need to add. You also want to be able to say, we're going to bring in a player that is going to help us in 2018, 19, and beyond. You can't just say, well, we have the void in 18, because things are going to change from offseason to offseason.
I understand the point, Lance, but I think what he's getting to is what we talked about earlier when we quoted Gettleman, and quite frankly, it's an old George Young theory. Never go into the draft saying we must get position X.
Well, and that's more of what I'm saying. You should not be locked into that because you should be looking for players that can help you regardless of what position they are,
yeah,
from a big picture perspective.
But what he's suggesting is not draft-wise, but how does that affect your free agency-wise? Because he was of the mindset that the Giants are either through trade or free agency acquiring guys who will plug into two gaping holes on this team so that you don't have to go into the draft.
Yes,
thinking
you have the flexibility to grab somebody that's going to be an impactful player regardless
best
of the position.
Best player available,
yeah.
Long-term view.
But you
have that luxury only if you plug the immediate needs elsewhere.
I buy that to a certain degree, but I still go back to if the free agency period doesn't work out to the court of public opinion's desires.
No, it's about Dave Gettleman's opinion.
Well, but I'm talking about the fans' reaction to what happens.
Their reaction's irrelevant.
Agency. I know it's irrelevant, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it plays out in terms of dialogue outside of this building.
Okay.
So my point is, if you're a GM, you still need to look at the big picture perspective no matter what you do in free agency. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, sure.
That always should be the mindset. That always should be the mindset. So meaning when you get to the number two pick, whether or not you got whatever you needed off your checklist in free agency, you still need to ask yourself, if I use the number two pick here and I take a Saquon Barkley or I take a quarterback, am I taking a player that in the long haul I think is going to be an impactful player? Remember, Dave Gettleman, when he spoke to the Combine reporters, when he spoke there, I'm paraphrasing.
He said,
when you pick second, and he referenced the fact that the last time the Giants picked second was 82, when they got Lawrence Taylor.
81,
excuse me, I'm sorry. So when they got Lawrence Taylor, the mindset was, we're bringing in a Hall of Fame caliber player. And that's what the mindset is this year. When you pick at number two, you want to make sure you're taking a player that is going to be here for perhaps the next 10 years or so. That's at least the vision.
See, why I laugh a little bit about this is because, and I'm as old school as anybody, you know that, and I don't pull any punches regarding those terms. The Football 101 playbook has so many theories, so many philosophies, and they're not exclusive. They overlap in some way, and in some ways they contradict one another. Because if you go by the philosophy that you're always going to take the best player available, well, then that kind of butts heads with the philosophy that says you can't go into the draft having a must-need position. You see?
Well, I mean,
if you do, you're now butting heads with the thought that you have to take the best player available. Because you get cornered into the must-need position philosophy. And now it's like, oh, my goodness. And again, I referred to when George Young went against his mentality and took Cedric Jones at number five because the Giants were desperate for a defensive end.
And that put you in a dangerous situation.
And they made a mistake. Yeah. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. They made a mistake. They did not take the best guy available. They took a defensive end because they had a must need. And he learned from that. He knew he shouldn't have done it. He did it. It didn't work out, and that was the last time the Giants did that. You know, they learned the hard way.
Well, and that's why I think it's better to have the big picture perspective, no matter what your needs are. Because, I mean, we could go back through other drafts.
See, but it's harder to have that perspective if you have needs going in. You see what I'm getting at?
Well, but here's the thing. You're always going to have needs, Paul.
You'll always have needs.
I would make the argument you're always going to have needs. To say that you go into a draft saying we've got our entire depth chart set,
no,
to me is ridiculous.
There are needs, and then there are must-have guys.
Meaning, there's more urgency matters that need to be addressed. That I'm not going to disagree with you.
And depending upon how close your team is to being a playoff team, those must-have positions can be doubly must-have positions. You know what I'm saying? There is a level of need at every position in every draft. You always have needs, but sometimes it's up here.
Correct. But that doesn't mean – okay, I mean, so
– the Broncos need a quarterback, and there is no pulling any punches about
that. Okay, but the Broncos may say to themselves, fine, we need a quarterback. Number one, I can bang that out during free agency. And then that eliminates the equation of the draft. So they're all of a sudden, I don't need to worry about the draft. But let's say you get to the draft, right, and you still need a quarterback, and you're John Elway, okay? Mm-hmm. You've got a top five pick to begin with. Right. But if you don't think a quarterback is worthy of a top five pick, you get to the point where you're reaching. You're reaching to fill
that
need. Teams
do that all the time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is
teams do that all the time.
And that puts them in a worse hole
sure
the following
does.
Year and the year after that because they're trying to make up for the choice
Here's
they
the
made
thing.
With that fifth
Folks,
pick.
Folks, I'm sorry. I got to straighten this guy out.
Well, there's nothing straight out.
We actually agree on the result of what happens when you get into that pickle. The question is, how do you avoid that pickle, and how do you maintain the proper mentality that allows you to focus on your basic core philosophy without getting twisted and turned and into, oh, I'm John Elway, and I desperately need a quarterback, and I didn't get any of those in free agency. So you know what? I know I shouldn't reach, but I'm going to reach anyway, and I'm taking Josh Rosen.
Well, that's being disciplined. I mean, that's what you're hitting on, but that's what I'm saying.
And a lot of teams aren't.
Well, because it's difficult when you're on the clock and you're in those circumstances, but that's why
I'm
saying.
Yeah, and when the fans are all screaming at you because they want you to take that quarterback.
Well, wait a minute. You just said that's irrelevant, though. Going
it
back
should
to
be
the,
irrelevant.
I agree with you. It should be 100%
but
irrelevant.
But a lot of times, it doesn't become irrelevant.
Okay, so we're understanding there's different dynamics in play. I think we're all in agreement with that.
Lot.
But I think that if you keep the core philosophy of, does the player I want, does the need I have equate to the value of where I'm picking, then I think you can remain as disciplined as possible.
Well, that's what
that's what I'm getting at.
It's perfect not, scenario. That's what you want.
It's not.
That's what you want.
It's not even best player available. That's not what I'm arguing. I'm arguing I have the fifth overall pick. Based on my evaluation of the crop of players that are available when I pick at five,
right.
Do I feel one of these guys warrants the fifth pick?
Well,
that's what I need to ask myself, and I need to look around
in
my room and ask my scouts.
That's the perfect incubator scenario.
Correct, and that's what I'm arguing.
There's no argument.
That's what I'm selling, if you want me to phrase it that
you
way.
You don't have to sell that.
Fine, I don't need to sell it. But that's what I'm – if you that always
the,
have that philosophy.
That is the perfect scenario. Unfortunately, in this real world that we have –
and I understand nobody –
that scenario does
correct.
Not always
and everyone
exist.
Doesn't always follow that. And I'm not in disagreement there.
So then we've just wasted 10
well, no,
minutes
we,
of
we
these
didn't,
people's
no, we,
time.
Well, we didn't waste it. It's just a matter of – it goes back to the premise of what the caller was saying, which is how does what you do in free agency impact your urgency in the draft?
It absolutely does.
That was what the whole concept of this conversation
was. Yes, and he's
right.
It does.
And I'm not saying it does or it doesn't. What I'm saying is that regardless of the needs you have heading into the draft, that should always be your core philosophy, period. That should always be your core philosophy. Here's another example, Paul. Okay, let's go to Kansas City last year. The Kansas City Chiefs, okay? They have Alex Smith as their starting quarterback. He's got about 2 years left on his contract.
And they go for Mahomes.
Now, based on reports, they're going to ship him to Washington. But that's irrelevant right now. They have Alex Smith at this point last year. They aggressively move up to 13, okay? You could argue, even with moving up at 13, if I were to look at the Kansas City Chiefs roster entering the 2017 season, you're going to tell me you can't sell me on the fact that they had more pressing needs, even though they were a playoff team, to use that 13th pick to address something else. Could you make that argument?
Absolutely.
Okay, yet, what did they do? They drafted a quarterback. That is low on the totem pole in terms of needs, okay? But they were thinking to themselves, 13, long-term, Alex Smith is not going to be here forever. Patrick Mahomes warrants the 13th pick. Now, we're going to truly find out whether or not they made the right choice because Mahomes is now due to take over the starting reins.
Right.
But that's the philosophy that Kansas City had. They didn't say, well, you know, we could use another offensive lineman. We could use another defensive lineman. They said, bang for your buck.
But you left out part of the equation. There is a component to the equation that you're missing there, and that is they also believe that in 2017 they were a strong potential playoff team.
They did. I'm sure they had that feeling.
If they did not... they may not have done that.
It's possible. I wasn't in the roar room.
Okay,
I don't know what the mindset was. But
when you look at that mathematical equation, you have to make sure that's part of that equation before you get to the answer.
Okay, but this is what
and it does change things for some teams.
It does.
Well, but here's my feeling. I, as an executive, am not going
to
go
Let's
into
get
the
to
draft.
These people. They're waiting.
We will. We'll get
Why
to
Why are we wasting time with this?
We're talking about something relevant to the conversation.
I'm tired
the philosophy
of kicking
the
your butt.
You're
just
kicking
go,
my butt.
Just
I, didn't,
move.
Listen, I didn't know we were keeping score here. I didn't know. I mean, do I need the gloves on?
It's okay.
I just don't feel as if most teams go into the draft saying we are a playoff team or we aren't. For example, do you think the Rams went into last season with Sean McVay as their head coach and a lot of question marks thinking they were going in the playoffs?
I think every team is realistic enough, although some will try to fool themselves. When they go into the spring, they have an idea of about how many players away. And I've said this before. I do this with the Giants after every season. I say about how many players away are they from being in the playoff conversation? And I think the Giants are about 5 or 6 players away right now from being a playoff team again. A few years back, I thought they were about 10 or 12 away. And I don't think you can go into an offseason and realistically expect to come up with 10 or 12 immediate guys who are going to help you and give you significant snaps that give you enough productivity to get you back to where you want to be. I think that's way too many. But I do think it is realistic to do it in a season where you may need only 5 or 6 players. And I do think that teams look at that. I do think general managers say, you know what? We pretty much know right now, odds are stacked against us. Even if we get 5 or 6 players who can contribute immediately, we don't think we're good enough to win this division. I think they know that. And maybe they don't, but I think they do. I think they look in the mirror, and I think they are realistic as to what their short-term possibilities can be. Doesn't mean it's going to work out that way, but I think they're realistic as to what they think the window is going to be.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. John is in Brooklyn. John, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Doing all right, John. What do you got for us?
All right, I got a trade scenario. I heard a little while back Buffalo looking to trade into number 2 for Rosen. I think it's the ideal situation. I think you get 21-22. I also saw, like, the metrics to it. You also get next year's 1 and next year's 2, along with this 2 and Cordy Glenn. I mean, how can you turn that up? I'm thinking, so say the Ogletree and Norwell both go through. So even now, I think 21, if you got a guy like Will Hernandez still there, or Daniels, I'm not a big fan of Wynn. And then 22, I think you can go Lander Van Der Esch. You throw him there with Ogletree. And then I think 34, you can go with a guy like Sony Michel. And I think 53, if you get Buffalo's 2-2, I like the tackle out of Penn. I think his name, I think it's O'Neill, Brian O'Neill.
I know.
I think O'Neill.
All right, I want to make sure I got your price right, because we can't even move forward with this conversation unless we got the terms correct. You're saying 21-22.
From the Bills.
Second rounder, plus Cordy Glenn, plus next year's first and second rounder. That's what I think you said. Is that right?
That's what would equal out to number 2. That's what's crazy. But I'm saying, if that's being offered, how can you turn that down?
All right. Now, you're hearing this from where?
This was the reports on 24/7 Sports. The Giants, the guy Dan Schneider, and there's another metrics thing I'm on a group on, and they said that the metrics, if Buffalo wanted to trade up to 2 from that would be what's even or a little more than even.
Well, that's certainly a boatload of picks. I can't argue with that. Now, I will say this, and just to comment about Cordy Glenn in general as a player, he's had injury issues, especially with his feet. Okay.
No, I agree.
So
what I'm saying is, that's why at 53 you get a guy like O'Neill, because then you have some insurance there, because you still have Flowers, like you guys said, is still under the contract. Oh, and one thing I wanted to add from the beginning of the show, there's a 6th guy in that running back talk. It's Leonard Fournette, 25 carry guy.
Yeah, for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah, I mean, 5 or 6.
We weren't being exclusive with our list.
Correct. But, I mean, we were saying that it's a very small percentage of running backs in the NFL today.
Well, subject. I'm just saying that's the ideal situation. You get a little more help on the O-line. You get a little more help with the linebacking core. I think Sonny Michel, I'm a big fan of Sonny Michel. Even if you wait later on in the second round, you can get a guy like Kerryon Johnson. I'm a big fan of him, too. I don't like guys. I mean, I'm a draft bum. I break down game tape and everything. I'm like the realest fake GM there is, you know.
I will say this. The feeling from the combine, and you know, John and I spent 3 days out there, is that that would be too low for the Giants to go. And I appreciate the price that you're talking about. My goodness, that's a boatload of picks, and I've been preaching that for months. But the sense from the folks at the combine is that the Giants would not be dropping much past 10, 11, 12, even as 15, I've said before, might be the low point. The sense of, amongst NFL people is that they would not go down that far to Buffalo.
But what I'm saying is, isn't that ideal? That if you can get another guard and Will Hernandez to line up on the right side, and if you have Winola on the left side, if that kind of confirmation is true, if that we did really
well,
did sign him.
I think
and
part
then you have
of
a guy like
thinking...
Lander Van Der Esch, which I think is the second best linebacker behind Tremaine Edwards, who obviously won't be there. I'm not a fan of Roquan Smith. I don't get excited about 215-pound linebackers.
Yeah, I think part of the thinking is that the Giants, if they only go down a few spots, could still maybe get Quentin Nelson, who everyone seems to believe is as blue chip as they come at guard. And I also think that there's another thought that says if they go down much past, you know, the 15 area, they won't maybe have a shot at Mike McGlinchey, who is a plug-and-play left tackle out of Notre Dame. I think that a lot of
really
folks are looking
big,
at that as a logical
between
scenario.
Quentin Nelson and Will Hernandez?
What's that?
Do you think there's that big of a drop-off between Quentin Nelson and Will Hernandez?
I happen to be a big fan of Will Hernandez, and I would love to see the Giants get him at the top of round two. Again, the feeling at the combine was that he's going to move up into the back end of round number one. 20s,
yeah. That's
the feeling that kind of came out of Indianapolis. But do I think there's a drop-off? Sure I do.
Yeah.
Quentin Nelson, by everybody's account, is a lock decade dominating inside offensive lineman.
Which means, you know, you could even make the argument if he's there at number two. And
some of people have said that.
Yeah,
I don't think
it's a stretch.
I don't think you can go Barkley either. I think if you stay at number two, I think they have to draft Chubb. I think at an ideal standpoint to
Chubb.
To,
Chubb would be a consideration
Chubb,
for
Chubb
me.
Chubb would be a solid player value-wise at two as well. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I think the more and more you watch Nelson and more his stock is on the rise – and I know people talk about, well, you don't take a guard that high.
Right.
Zach Martin turned out pretty good for the Cowboys.
Yeah, no, I get it. But, yeah. I mean, I had him over Odell, too. I actually had Aaron Donald, then him. That's who I would have drafted in that pick right there. Mm-hmm. But and then I actually had Landry higher than Odell. But that's regardless. I'm just saying, I think ideally you trade back, and if you can get that many picks in the first and second round, I think that would be so much better off than if you go – the route of drafting just Quentin Nelson, and then you go second round, and then, you know,
lot,
when you get there, maybe
a lot, my
back,
friend,
maybe
a lot.
A tackle still there, or maybe.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. A lot depends on the conversation Lance and I had 5 minutes ago. What do you do in free agency? That certainly affects.
I think if the Ogletree and the Norwell deals are both true, I don't think you're going to have much cap for free agency. You know, I know you're going to finagle.
Well, let's just say this. If they were to acquire a veteran offensive lineman who is going to play guard, okay, if they do that, then if you re-sign DJ Fluker, you don't have a need to draft necessarily Quentin Nelson. You might have more of a need to wait or a more of a need to draft a tackle in McGlinchey. That could change that.
Remember, the combination.
O'Neal, the only tackles I like. I'm not a fan of Connor Williams. Obviously, Orlando Brown's stock is gone. I didn't like him to begin with. I'm actually an Oklahoma Sooner fan, too. I can advocate for Baker Mayfield, but I already know the Giants aren't going to take that. I believe in Baker. I believe he's the next Drew Brees, Russell Wilson-esque kind of smaller quarterback. I don't like anybody else in this draft. I think Sam Darnold's a bust. That's just my opinion. I think Josh Rosen, two concussions. I can't take him with the second pick with concussion history. And then I don't think Josh – I'm not a fan of Josh Allen either.
Well, I mean, listen, these are all the things that teams are evaluating, John, and appreciate the phone call. It depends on, you know, what happens in free agency. I think ultimately we were talking about, you know, maybe the target would be three offensive linemen, some combination between free agency
right.
and the draft. So it could be two free agents, one draft pick, could be vice versa. Who knows how things play out. But, you know, what the caller with the trade scenarios, I mean, he's of the argument volume is important, meaning gaining more access to more players. I'm more of the philosophy, substance to me is more important. substance over volume.
But yeah, you agree with me that they should consider trading that.
Yes, I'm not against considering the trade, but I am.
I don't want to go down to 21. That's too far.
Well,
and
I
most
believe
people
that,
at the combine agree with that.
I believe that that is pretty far. And I also go back to if everyone in the room believes that somebody should be selected at that number two overall pick and everybody's on the same page, then I say you
right.
go with your gut
and, I understand
and you
that.
Use the number two overall pick. And I'm not saying it's got to be a quarterback or it's got to be this. I'm just saying use the number two pick and don't be so quick to get rid of it.
To your point before about value.
Yeah.
There was a strong feeling amongst, again, the consensus people at the combine, and John will tell you this if Schmoke was in the room too. The consensus was you could go somewhere in the area of the low teens, maybe about 15 or so, which is why the number keeps coming up with me, before you get to that next level of value. There seems to be a dozen or so players who most people at the combine thought were your top shelf guys. So therefore, if you're going to make a trade with Buffalo down to 21 and 22, you're now flat out saying to yourself, okay, we're not going to be shopping on the top shelf. We're going to be shopping from the one that's just underneath it.
Clearly, there's a drop off when you're picking at 2 versus 21 and
22. No, but even from 10 to 12 to 15
versus
down to 21, 22.
No, I agree with you. There's different tiers to the first round.
You're admitting now you're going to go to that next tier.
Well, because the argument is, once again, you're admitting volume is important to you, meaning we'd rather have perhaps on that second tier two guys as opposed to just settling for one guy on the top
but
tier.
But you could still get volume and get a guy in the top tier if you trade down to 11.
Well, you could certainly settle in between, you're right, or you could get a guy at two that could turn out to be
That's
a franchise
too.
Impactful player. So there's various ways that you can look
Indeed.
At it. All right, let's head back to the lines. Bob is in Pennsylvania. Bob, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi. All right, Bob. What do you got for us?
Previous caller was a good call. He stole a lot of my thunder. I just want to make a quick comment, and then I have a quick question. I've always been against taking a quarterback at two. I've always wanted to trade down, and I'm more convinced now after hearing about how each of these four quarterbacks is the best guy that none of them are worth the number two pick. So I'm kind of glad that, like you said, Lance, if the guy's supposed to be a Hall of Famer, I don't think any of these guys fit the bill.
No.
So I believe the route is going to be trade down, which is probably going to be the smart move.
How far do you want to go?
If you can get a stud lineman, I really didn't want to go down to 21, 22, but if you could steal a lot from Buffalo, but I'd rather be like what you said, Paul, like within the top 10. And you're definitely going to get a stud. Maybe you'll get Nelson if you go down a few slots. But, taking a quarterback who's not going to be an Andrew Luck, something that no one's really brought up is that do you really want to go with three quarterbacks again on the roster? Next year, Davis Webb should be the backup. And, I guess the question I had, I don't know if you could answer this yet, where it's not official, but the Ogletree trade, is that the fourth round pick our pick, or is that the compensatory for Hankins?
Well, once again,
because
nothing.
That's the difference between a fourth and a fifth round pick, really.
Well, nothing has been officially announced by the Giants, so I mean, at this point, the team is not in a position.
I got to wait till next week. But
correct. March 14th, everything becomes official.
If it's a compensatory pick, that's almost like a fifth-round pick.
Well, based on how compensatory picks work, I mean, your definition is not off base in terms of where those compensatory picks are.
It goes after the fourth round is completed, right?
Correct.
The compensatory
picks. Yep.
So basically, if it's our pick, that's the top of the draft. The fourth round, and if it's the compensatory,
closer
it's
to the fifth round.
Fourth round.
Yeah, no, I mean by definition, you're correct. I don't disagree with that take.
Interesting, and by the way,
I just wondered if it was out there yet. Which one of those fourth rounds was in the package?
I think we all know from watching what has happened over the last year, the proliferation of inaccurate news reports has made at least this person and maybe many others very leery of talking about and reporting lots of things that turn out not to be 100% accurate.
We'll
because, quite frankly, yeah, exactly. Because remember, Matt Patricia was going to be the head coach of five different NFL teams.
I'm glad that didn't happen
well,
either.
And that's why by Wednesday of next week, when the new league year starts, you're going to see a lot of these rumored trades become official if they do come to fruition.
Like I said, John stole a lot of my thunder. I thought he was a good call, but I just thought maybe it was out there as to with that fourth round.
When it happens,
and like I said, I
call
hope,
us back.
I wouldn't mind if we ended up with Barkley, but I think stealing some extra picks would be the way to go.
All right, Bob. Appreciate
Thank
the
phone
you. Call.
By the way, just as a matter of NFL policy, it's only recently that the league decided you were eligible to trade compensatory picks. There was a time, in fact, it was the way it was since they brought them into play, you could not deal them. They are now tradable, just to get that clarified.
And in terms of, you know, number two, the Hall of Fame point that we were talking about earlier, nobody says you have to take a quarterback at number two. You could very well get a running back or an offensive lineman that becomes a Hall of Famer.
Oh, I know that.
Okay. Well, no, I know you know that. I'm just saying the last caller was saying, well, if I don't think any of these quarterbacks are going to be Hall of Fame-esque, then I'm not taking them. I understand that. But nobody says you got to take a quarterback. Saquon Barkley, maybe a Hall of Famer. Quentin Nelson, maybe a Hall of Famer.
Could be.
If they feel that way, then I would say that warrants the number two selection. Let's head back to the lines. Len is in Columbia. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
All right, Len. What do you got for us?
I'm going to think that the Ogletree trade is real and ask Paul if indeed it's real. Is he one of your five or six players, Paul, that we need to get closer to the playoffs?
Any guy who can give you a significant amount of productive snaps, okay, who you did not have before, is one of those guys. So I'll let you be the judge.
I got you. I think, you know, I like that answer. And if indeed Ogletree is a Giant next year, I'm enthused about that. I like that. I think it fits a position of need, and we also got the kind of player that you're indeed talking about that. Just a little different take on the five or six players, Paul.
Yeah.
I think you win enough games to make playoffs next year, no matter what team you are. If you got 30 guys who can play in the NFL and you got an equality of injuries as you go through the season, I think it takes 30 contributors to win. Now, I'm not grading 30. I'm not downgrading 31 through 46 or 53, because it sounds like I might be doing that. And I know Gettleman threw out 63 and said you got to have early on. He said,
he did.
To win.
He did. I thought it was a good line.
but I like to think in terms of 30 guys contributing.
I can't think that way, Len.
I understand.
I can't think that way because if you shoot the bar low, then chances are you're going to wind up falling short of it. I think you always have to shoot the bar as high as possible and strive for the ceiling. I think that's the only way you can operate.
Okay. You had a fellow on last week from the Combine. By the way, those were great shows. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. We had a good time doing them.
I appreciate it. They were some really good shows. You had one guy on. I'm not really going to argue with him. Just try to make a point. I don't know who it was, but he had the Giants going Chubb, the defensive end, in the first round.
Yeah.
And the running back from Auburn in the second round, and both good players. I mean, both good players,
sure,
and probably deserving of their position that he had them. But the point I wanted to make about his take was that I can't see us going through the first two rounds without drafting an offensive lineman. Somewhere in there, we have to pick an offensive lineman.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Len, because I do think there are enough of two-round values at the position.
Okay.
So I'm inclined to agree with you.
Okay. Now, here's where I want to go with the draft. I want to hold the pick. I know we got 6 weeks to go. Things change. You start getting those spring break reports. You never know what's going to come up. But right now, today, I'm hanging on to the pick. And here's what I'm not going to throw out a name, but maybe I'm eliminating some people by what I say here. I want an immediate starter. Write it in pen, not pencil. 2018 immediate starter. Write it in as pet in pen as soon as the draft is over.
Okay.
Secondly, I want a three down player.
Okay.
I want a three down player. Thirdly, I want a guy who is viewed as a potential multi Pro Bowl type player. And four, I want a clean player. I want a clean player. And fifthly, I want to like the guy. I want to want by the end of the season, I want to buy his jersey. That's the kind of guy I like. I want a likable guy at the end of the line.
Well,
draft.
I mean, I don't know
universal.
Necessarily. Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't disagree with any of your criteria, Len. I mean, as far as liking the guy, I don't know necessarily if that automatically translates to production. I think production is much
just,
more important than whether or not you love the guy.
But you like the guy if he produces.
Well, no. Yeah, but there's people that they like the guy, how he produces, but they don't necessarily love him as an individual. So I guess I thought that's what Len was alluding to. Yeah.
Okay. So today I want to hang on to the pick. And
okay.
I think there's a player there who fits my criteria. And,
sure.
You know, great work, guys. You know, this is a great time of year. Love it. And I'll be talking to you again soon.
All right, Len.
Thank you.
Thank you, Len. Appreciate the phone call. I think those are reachable, obtainable goals. The one exception I would throw out is about getting a guy that's definitely going to be a three-down starter. Year one. I think you go into that, but once again, I'm thinking beyond 18. I'm not losing sight of beyond 18 when I draft at number two, if the team keeps the pick.
Well,
I think you have to look beyond 18. You can't just be closed-minded for 1 year.
Understood. I think the one thing that he said in terms of offensive line, though, is very, very important because, as we've discussed, and I think you were on board with me, it would really behoove the Giants to bring in three offensive linemen who can compete for a starting job. I think we both are on board with that, right?
I think that number is...
All right, and we don't care how the number, you know, reaches reality.
Correct.
It can be
whether
two and one, one and two.
Draft, free agency. It's got to be a combination of both. I think
now,
we're in agreement.
I think to do that, you probably do have to draft a lineman in the first two rounds. I don't think you can wait till round three to even get that one guy. Now, it's possible. It's possible, but it's a bit of a reach. I think a guy who's going to be drafted in the third round of the draft, if he's a guard, he's got a better shot than a tackle based on what we've learned at the combine. A third-round guard may or may not be. I think it's quite risky that he's going to be a plug-and-play competitive starter. I do think you can get a second-round immediate starter at guard, based on what was said at Indianapolis. So I want to make that clear. I mean, Len is certainly on the right track there, logically speaking, based on the reality of what we think is available.
The other thing that I want to add, now, this is a different team. It's not the Carolina Panthers, but we've talked about this on the show multiple times, Paul. If you look at Gettleman's track record going back to his Carolina drafts, he did not take offensive linemen in the second round.
Well, not take him in
the first round.
Yeah, but I remember my chart. He never went fourth round or lower.
But the point is, we're talking about the third, fourth round area.
The third round was still plausible to him, but he wasn't waiting any longer than that.
No, he wasn't. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't think the third round is a reach. Meaning if you say to yourself, it's got to be one or two.
I think third round is somewhat sketchy. Based on what we heard in Indianapolis, it's like your two rounds you can get almost plug and play guys. Round three, it's kind of iffy. So, I do think the goal would be to get one in the first two. If you can't do it, if something happens, if you wind up just getting guys that you so feel strongly about, maybe you do have to wait till round three. But I kind of would like to. Before
no, and I understand where you're coming from, but you know, I'm also thinking the combination could be, for example, one re-signing of a free agent that played for the Giants last season, like a Fluker, for example, mm-hmm. to your point, okay? An external free agent, okay, so that's two.
Okay.
And then maybe a third-round pick. I'm just giving you a hypothetical. I'm not saying it's going to happen like
absolutely.
That, but I could see that. If that scenario plays
out. You better hit on that third rounder,
of course.
Though.
Well, I think that goes without saying. You definitely want to have some conviction when you take that play.
You really have to have gotten good steal, a good value there, because I think the third round gets a little sketchy about in terms of a guy who's going to be able to compete for a starting job this September. I think it gets a little sketchy. And that's strictly coming off the basis of information that we got in Indy at the Combine. It just didn't sound like – it sounds like there are guys who are going to be strong reserves in the third round that may project down the road. But
not necessarily year one talking about.
Right. Your year one guys, I think you got to go second round as the latest.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Glenn is in Costa Rica. Glenn, what's happening?
How you doing, guys? I've been wanting to make this phone call for a while, and you guys spoke about some of the stuff I wanted to talk about. I'm about Paul's age, and I agree with just about everything he said. And I think he mentioned something a couple weeks ago about maybe five players that are going to impact the team this year. And I think Gettleman wants to do that. Now, let's just assume that we pick up Norwell and Ogletree. That leaves three more guys we need. All right, so you take Bradley Chubb in the first round. Oh, by the way, I wanted to say we need two linebackers, two linemen, and a running back. So you take Bradley Chubb in the first round, and that leaves you need a running back and you need a lineman in the second and third round. You take either the running back in the second round and hope for a good lineman in the third round, or in the second round you take the best available lineman, might be a better play, and then take the best available running back. And you've addressed five needs, and rest everything after that is gravy. That's just my opinion.
Well, I'll say this. Because of the depth at running back, and there are a bunch of coverage linebackers in this draft, as we found out in Indianapolis, okay, and we've already talked about, you know, some of the depth at the top of the draft for the offensive linemen, especially guards, the Giants' needs do, for the most part, fit the strengths of this draft. I think we can say that. So however you mix and match the number of the round with the number of position players that you get, they should be in relatively good shape to get what they need. But of course,
absolutely,
free agency is first, so let's see how that pans out.
Well, but the other thing is, you know, we're throwing out this five- or six-player number. The depth can't be dismissed
and
overlooked.
I mean, well, it can't be.
Because the depth, if you go back to last season,
it crippled them.
I mean, with all the players that got hurt and then having to pick guys up off the street. So when we say five, and I understand that was just a number
six,
you threw out.
I say five or
no,
six.
No,
I'm
not holding you to that number. That's not why I keep bringing up
the
number.
That could be addressed later in the draft.
Well, yeah, but the point is you can't just take for granted that the rest of your draft is going to solve your depth. That also has to come through free agency. Mm-hmm. That has to come through undrafted players that you hopefully get something out of when you bring them into training camp. And, you know, whoever Gettleman may have been scouting to. I mean, keep in mind, you know, people bring up Norwell. You know, go back and look at Norwell's path to the National Football League. He found Norwell off the street. Okay,
yes, he did.
I think the way we talk about Norwell is if Norwell walked into the NFL and he was an All-Pro player. No, Norwell groomed himself to become an All-Pro player.
Yes.
He was an undrafted player. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to get gold all the time when you just look at the street, but you've got to find other ways to round out your roster than necessarily just saying, our draft, we're going to strike gold with everybody, and we're going to be sitting pretty for 2018.
Right.
Just have a plan going in on what you want to do first.
And that I completely understand.
Well, I tell you what, along those lines, how many people knew who Richie Seibert was?
There's another one, yeah.
Before the Giants signed him as an undrafted rookie free agent, and look what he did for this team.
And you need some of those players. I'm not saying that you can get lucky with all five or six, but if you get one or two, you're going to need to at least rely on somebody that is an unknown commodity to come in and produce, given the restrictions of the cap and also the restrictions in terms of the amount of picks you have. Yeah.
Right. All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Glenn.
Appreciate
the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And, you know, that's the puzzle that has to be put together. Where do you grab your resources from, and how do you fit it in within the restraints financially?
And I think that's one of the things that makes Gettleman so attractive to the Giants in this role, is that he has had a track record, whether it was as a personnel guy or as a GM with Carolina, of trying to unearth very good value with guys who may be a bit, or for that matter, totally under the radar.
And I think he's got a very good track record in terms of under-the-radar guys. I just want to get to a tweet or two real quickly before we wrap up. Lisa at SoBad6. Guys, can you get to this question? Would you give Cleveland our number two, get their four, and their second-round picks? She's throwing out a hypothetical. So meaning the Giants go from 2-4.
Right.
Okay. And
right.
then also, I guess, the second round picks that Cleveland has are handed to the Giants as well under those circumstances. So you're basically, you're moving down two spots.
Move down two
spots.
And then
Cleveland would essentially have then the first and the second overall picks. Personally, I don't think Cleveland should make that deal because I don't think they need to make that deal knowing they can wait till four to still get a quality player.
Yeah, I don't see why Cleveland would do that,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
I don't either.
Although it would be certainly unique and historic for a team to have the first two picks overall in the draft. That's kind of fun. But the Giants only get an extra two out of that deal?
Correct. That's what. Well, I mean, she's throwing out a question mark after that.
I don't know that I'd do that if I were the Giants, to be honest with you.
Well, keep in mind, 2-4, that's not a huge nosedive.
It's not a huge jump.
So, you know, that's not like going from 2 to 21 and 22 where you have to make up the gap. So, listen, would you probably want more? Yes, you'd always ask for more. But I don't
sure
think
you do.
Well, you're smirking when I say that.
Sure you
but
do.
But I don't think that there's going to be that type of exchange where you're going to get future first rounders and then some when you're only moving down two spots.
I might tell them I need an additional three even. I'm getting more than that. I'm just telling you.
No, and I would certainly ask for that, but I don't think it's – if you're expecting to get the same type of return that you would get if you moved down to 21 and 22
– No, of course not.
I think that's
the
a ridiculous
stretch. The further
down
you go, the higher the prices.
Of course.
I totally understand.
So 2-4 is a very small gap that you'd have to make up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe an additional pick or two, but I don't think anything that drastic.
I leave you with this thought, and I know we have to run. I don't think the Giants are making that number two pick until they make that number two pick. I think there are too many options for them to be absolutely sold and hardened into concrete that they know what they're going to do and it's not going to move and that, bang, this is it. We're not going to listen to anybody else. I wouldn't be shocked if they take their entire time on the clock before they put that card in.
Well, you got to wait and see what Cleveland does because Cleveland may have a knuckleball thrown their way. And then all of a sudden, now teams are picking up the phone and they are more attractive to the number two pick.
I just hope the Giants have like 31 separate phones on their phone bank.
I'm sure they have the resources. You want to loan them? You want to loan them your antique phone? Would you like to do that?
I got a couple of dial ones still at home.
Yeah, rotary phones.
Yes.
Absolutely. All that good stuff will come in useful on draft day. All right, that is going to wrap up our program today. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live, back up and running on Monday at noon Eastern as we continue to move towards the start of free agency, which is Wednesday, March 14th. We will continue to field all your phone calls and your tweets. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Friday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.